as I mentioned, less than 2 weeks before pitchers and catchers report. Put a percentage on it for me as to how much of your off-season personnel work still remains to be done.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on, Jeff. Good to hear from you guys. And yeah, we're excited. I just got back from Dunedin and had a great trip with Charlie Montoya down to the Dominican Republic to meet our staff and players down there and spend some time at the facility as we continue to onboard Charlie. And that has just been an exceptional experience and process thus far. So to answer your question on the percentage of our offseason, yeah, I mean, it kind of depends. You know, there's obviously a lot that could occur in spring training even, and there's a lot of things that could still acquire throughout the season as you just continue to try to build depth and make the organization better. But, you know, somewhere probably in the 75 to 95% range, I suppose, if you were, putting a percentage on that. At the same time, you know, we have a ton of flexibility and there's a lot of opportunities out there. So, if something occurs that was unexpected on acquisition costs, whether that be trade or free agency, we'll be prepared as we have a ton of agility at this point.
Are you surprised at how many players are still out there? Just from a personal point of view, not speaking for the organization or anything, but as someone who, you know, a baseball guy, somebody who's spent their life around the game, are you surprised that there are that many players out there right now, and not just spare parts? I mean, there's some decent pitchers, some decent position players.
Well, I mean, this change has been occurring for several years. So surprised might be too strong of a word, but the number of free agents that continues to remain closer to spring training, is probably less than ideal for baseball. You know, having said that, we've talked a lot about this, Jeff, and we've talked about it on the air as the changes that have occurred and the reluctance of front offices to be more and more continually aggressive in free agency is, something that's talked about constantly, and it's something that we want to make better. We want to improve, but there's nothing really more fulfilling. Well, the most fulfilling thing is winning as an organization and having a collective team pulling for something exceptional and accomplishing something exceptional. Having said that, the players making a lot of money is a part of this career. It's a part of the game, and it's something that we are all for. So it's really just an interesting time in the game that's getting a lot of discussion for good reason, and will continue to.
As we sit here 13 days away from pitchers and catchers showing up in camp, what focus do you have as you monitor the free agent market or indeed the personnel market, trades, whatever? What focus do you have? Is it still mostly or almost solely starting pitching, but pitching in general?
Yeah, I think mostly for sure, not solely. We'll consider any way to make the team better. I know, I always say that because it's true. So it's never in isolation. But at the same time, I think at this point, in order to add to our position player group, we would have to subtract to have enough playing time to make sure that there's opportunities for players to get better and to have a nice balance to playing time, as I mentioned, an opportunity. But, pitching is such an interesting area because we have the numbers for sure and we have solid depth. But there's a lot more volatility there in performance and health. So we'll continue to look to add depth there. And if there's, whether that's starting or reliever, will depend on the variables that I've mentioned previously, and acquisition cost, opportunity. But we feel good about the depth that we have, that we've continued to acquire. We've acquired a massive number of pitchers in the last year and a half, and we'll continue to look to do that. I think in the past 3.5 years, it's all been about talent acquisition. And now we're at the point where we really need to be focused on pitching at every potential acquisition.
You know, Ross, every spring training, spring training goes on and the games get played. You see a lot of players called up from minor league camp to play in the game. Sometimes they get in the games late, but it's it's, I guess, a combination of things rewarding guys, but it's also, it also gives the major league staff an idea to sort of see somebody on a firsthand basis, somebody they may need to be thinking about as a call-up in September or during the season if there's injury, or even in the next spring training, a hot prospect. Will the organization's philosophy about which minor leaguer gets called up for spring training games, does that change at all now that you are going to have, you know, you're going to have to be getting some at-bats for a lot of guys who are on the cusp, you know, not just, they're not just going to be taking at-bats from a guy who's been around for 5 years and quote unquote, you know, needs a little bit of a break. You're going to be taking at-bats away from younger players in a lot of cases. Does that change how the organization will view bringing up, let's say, a guy like Kevin Smith or, I don't know, Logan Warmoth for a game?
Yeah, it's a really perceptive question, and it really comes down to depth. When you have options, then you have an opportunity to create rewarding and incentivizing the right things. So when you don't have enough depth and you just have to use the players that are capable of handling that environment, then it's hard to really focus on rewarding guys that are the best teammates, that have the best effort, and, you know, welcoming them into that environment. So that has been our focus from day one. And now we're at that point where we really can, place a great deal of emphasis on that. And we did that last year at the start in September. A lot of the guys that we brought up were guys that we were rewarding for being incredible teammates, for exemplifying the things that we're looking for, and just not only human beings on the field, in the clubhouse, but off the field. And, you know, Anthony Alford's performance didn't suggest that he should be here. Rowdy Tellez's performance didn't suggest that he should be here last year, but they had done some exceptional things as teammates, had overcome exceptional things, and we felt like rewarding them was the right thing to do and would send a strong message to them and to their teammates. And I think it paid dividends. So, you know, those will be the some of the things that we will look to place emphasis on. But at the same time, you know, Jeff, you know as well as I do, you got to be able to perform, and you got to be able to demonstrate that you belong in that environment.
Just a little sort of off. I'm just going to say off the beaten path, but I don't know if that's necessarily the right phrase. But, you know, there's been a report, the New York Post, and of course TMZ had a report as well about Casey Clemens being pretty seriously hurt, it seems, in an altercation of some description on New Year's Eve. There's some suggestion that litigation may result from it. I know there's only so much you guys can say about it, but he is a Jays player. There seems to be a suggestion that he has a fairly serious arm injury. How closely is the organization monitoring this situation, and sort of, you know, where are the organization's responsibilities here? You know, leaving aside the legal stuff, just as the fact that this guy is a Jays, you know, he's one of your guys, he's a Jays minor leaguer. Where do you guys view your responsibility when it comes to Casey Clemens?
Yeah, I mean, we're fortunate in that we have incredible resources and incredible agility on that front, and the ability to help and provide whatever resources are necessary for Casey and for almost any player that comes across a challenge on or off the field. And whether or not we are actually responsible for something that happens off the field financially, there aren't too many cases where we don't roll out the red carpet and figure out what it is we can do to help that individual. And Casey has been an exceptional, exceptional human being and teammate here. He's won several accolades here as one of the better teammates at each level where he's been. So we have been in touch with him. We will continue to support him in any way possible that we can, as we learn more about what we can do from a health and just from an overall well-being standpoint.
Is there a concern that this could be a career-threatening injury? I mean, that may be unfair to ask, given where we are at this stage, but...
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather not get into that at this point, given the amount of information that we have.
All right. We talked about available players and how, you know, the free agent market is full of useful pieces right now. There's some not necessarily useful pieces, but there are useful pieces. Freddie Galvis is an acquisition that intrigues me just because, I mean, he's a switch hitter. He does give you positional versatility. He allows you to utilize other players in terms of positional versatility. But he's also a good defender. How should Jays fans view Freddie Galvis's acquisition in terms of what it means for Lourdes Gurriel Jr.?
Yeah, I mean, so really it comes down to, we're going to get to the point where shortstop is probably not going to be an area where we're going to need to acquire talent. We have an abundance of that throughout our system, but, not rushing players mm-hmm. and exposing them to the expectations of, because it's not just defense, it's the everyday at-bats, it's the everyday wear and tear, it is the major leagues. It's a step up. So wanting to do that when guys have proven they are ready and demonstrated that they can provide that average major league defense and the everyday at bat is something that this allows for several things. One, it allows us to be patient with Lourdes Gurriel and with Richard Urania and with Bo Bichette and with Kevin Smith. And the list is long. Logan Warmuth, the Leo Jimenez, I can keep going down. We have such an abundance of middle infield depth that this will allow us to not be in a position where we have to push or overexpose someone. Secondarily, if we were to have an injury to Lourdes Gurriel or Richard Urania, then we would not be prepared to be pushing someone up that hadn't had the AAA bats or hadn't been exposed to those levels just because we had an injury. Mm. So, somewhat related, but, and then the other piece that you mentioned is we want to put a good team on the field, and we want to put, a team on the field that our pitchers are excited about, the defense behind them. That's been an initiative of ours to improve our defense, and Freddie will certainly do that. What we've learned about Freddie Galvis from his teammates, his past teammates, he has one on our team right now that he played with for some time, and Clayton Richard, is that he is one of the most exceptional teammates and leaders in the game. I mean, he's selfless, and he loves preparation. He loves the work. He loves to help other people, and we feel like his influence will be a good one in more than just the defensive area.
He's a switch hitter, and I know we've had this discussion several times, both on air and off air, but, one of the hallmarks of Cleveland Indians and has been positional versatility, and to me that also, switch hitting kind of factors into that as well. As this organization gets closer, we get closer to seeing sort of the full-time future Blue Jays get here. Is it going to be important for this organization to acquire a couple of switch hitters just to – to give Charlie an extra option or maybe, allow a player to stay in a game longer and maybe help shield some younger players? Is it something we may see more of?
Yeah, I mean, the platoon effect is real, but ideally you have guys that, don't struggle against either right-handed or left-handed.
Right.
Being a switch hitter helps that. Having said that, if you're a switch hitter with a 650 OPS versus just a right-handed hitter with a 780 OPS, then who's probably going to be playing. Mm. So there's a balance. And I think versatility, whether at the handedness, platoon, position, is definitely an asset and definitely something that we will continue to look to value. Positional versatility and handedness, so guys that organizations that have multiple switch hitters in their lineups are often so hard to plan for, to attack, and how to set up your bullpen and use it. Something as simple as the opener now, the switch hitter impact and being able to make those adjustments in game makes it much more difficult. So, yes, it is extremely powerful. It's a heavy indicator of success. Proven to be a little bit easier to have success as a left-handed hitter in the major leagues than it is as a right-handed hitter because the abundance of very, very good starting and relief pitching that's right-handed. But having said that, we need to put the ball in play. We need to hit doubles and triples and drive the ball over the fence and get guys in. So, any way that we can potentially do that, we'll do that. And handedness is certainly a part of the equation.
Ross, in terms of the logistics of spring training, what is the timetable for the new facility to be built, and how are you guys going to balance sort of the logistics of building the new complex while also doing the business that needs to be done in spring training and through the year when it comes to rehabbing players and having the single A affiliate in Dunedin. Have you guys got a plan in place as to how you're going to keep the thing functioning while it's being rebuilt?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Mark Shapiro and Andrew Miller, Mike Morove on the baseball ops side with our HP and player development departments have given a ton of time and energy in thinking about how, one, this can be an elite, if not one of the best in the game, resource for the Toronto Blue Jays, and then secondarily making sure we don't compromise anything in the short term, and we will ensure that development is not compromised. And then, you know, the timeline, hopefully next year in spring training we're closer to state of the art, and we'll see, you know, with construction and the need for us to continue to compete, there could be setbacks, but we are exceptionally excited from going to from one of the facilities that needs the most attention to one of the best in the game is going to be great for our players across so many fronts. Everyone refers to them as spring training facilities, and it's really just a development complex where we're operating year-round. We're already doing that now. We are operating there year-round. It will be a lot easier and a lot more attractive to do so once we have a state-of-the-art facility.